Okay, turn to Proverbs chapter 1. I got thinking about this, and it's like, Dad didn't spring it on me to preach tonight, so I didn't turn to just Proverbs chapter 1 and try to find something real quick, okay? Even though it seems like that. We just started reading in Proverbs here last week with the kids again, and I don't know. I've read Proverbs I don't know how many times. But usually the way it works is everybody wants you to read a chapter a day, and you read it once a month, and then you read it 12 times a year, and it gets to be more of a just da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And if you slow down and take it one verse at a time, now I know why Rick Williams taught the teen boys Sunday school class all of my teenage years, and he never got out of Proverbs. Not once. He always taught in Proverbs. And he wasn't redundant. There's a lot of stuff in there. So, I want to read Proverbs chapter 1. We're going to read verse 10. Just verse 10. I got another verse to read later on, but we just Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Pretty simple. But there's a little more to it than just, if someone tells you to come with them, just don't do it. So, let's talk about that for a few minutes. We're just going to, shouldn't be real long. It's just, but anyway, let's have a word of prayer. Father, thank you for your blessings on us now. I pray that you'd meet with us, help me with this, Lord, and pray we get something out of this. Pray that we just put this away, take it to heart, and Lord, remember this very simple truth that everything kind of runs on here. And just be with us now in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. All right, so I don't know if they call this, is it expository where you just go line by line? Is that what it is? That's kind of what this is going to be. It's more of a study on it than it is, you know, beat the pulpit sermon, you know. But it's real. Let's just go through it and break it down. My son. Solomon was talking to his son. Whole lot of what Proverbs was wrote down for was for someone, if it wasn't him, it was the other two men that wrote it, but it was for their posterity. The ones coming along behind them. You know, our children are, you've heard it said before, you know, our kids are just on loan from God. But they really are. They're, you know, for some reason the Lord felt that we were worthy to be given the responsibility, like the stewardship of somebody's soul. That's a heavy thing, you know, and the older they get, the heavier it gets. I didn't really anticipate that, but it's not just about keeping them alive as they're little and keeping them from jumping off of cliffs and playing in the road and everything else. You know, the weight of the fact that their eternity depends on what I teach them or what I don't. You know, and what I let into their life. You know, the Lord gave you your children for you to raise and not anybody else. And, you know, a lot of times people will take that and run it through their own mill and say, well, you know, they'll take it. How would you say it? From a selfish standpoint and just say, nobody else knows my kid. They don't know what it needs. They don't know what he needs or she needs. I'm the parent. I get to decide, and nobody else can say anything about it. Well, that's kind of what I'm talking about a little bit here tonight, because it's a problem that isn't just with parenting. It's like all the way across the board, and it applies to sin. It applies to marriage. It applies to everything. Everybody doing their own thing. And, you know, God gave you those children, but he's going to hold you accountable for those kids. And, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you're the gatekeeper for that child. And what you don't let in can be just as dangerous or just as detrimental as what you do let in. You know, there's things that needs to be done with these little kids and then with my big kids. And you're going to have big kids someday. And all of it. Hey, we all are in different stages of all this, but there's things that I wish I would have let influence my kids when they were little that I didn't, that I rejected almost, well, let's just call it what it is, out of rebellion. against what was right, what I'd been taught, what I thought what I felt represented the contra mías, like the Mexicans said, the ones who were not supportive of my worldview. Let's just put it that way. So I wouldn't let them influence my children. And I wished I had of, because the alternative that I let in there to influence my kids has been part of the struggle we've had for all the years. The thing I've had to fight is what I let influence them. The television has a whole big bunch to do with that. Innocent little things that you'd never dream. They impact them forevermore. Mm-hmm. They just really do. On how they even process thought. That's a big important thing that I don't. That's a whole nother subject. But you teach your kids how to think, or else somebody else does.
Yes.
And they'll always teach them how to not think like you. They really will.
That's right.
So, God gave those kids to me. He gave them your kids to you. Solomon had a son, and that's who he was talking to here. His advice to him in this one verse was, "If sinners entice thee, consent thou not." You reckon Solomon had been enticed up to this point any at all? You reckon he remembered his dad? You've been talking about him for months here on Sunday mornings. But, you know, Solomon, you know, he was the result of his dad being enticed. And that stigma, you got to think about it. You know, if you have a child, even in a little town like this, that's born, as the old timers called him, a woods colt, you know, nobody's kid. Does that follow that child around? Oh, it's just like a big letter on the front of their shirt all their life. Now, the world we live in now, they put a whole lot of effort into not putting any condemnation on that at all, but not for the kids' sake. And so they don't feel guilty about whoring around and making the poor child that has to live with this all their life. But the stigma's still there, and the child still feels it. And they grow up with that. Solomon was one of those kids. Do you realize that? Now, his mom and dad got married, I understand. But he grew up with that being whispered behind his back. And yet, he still wound up with some wisdom here because God gave it to him. But this is what he had to say. If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Well, let's look at it this way. Who are the sinners he's referring to? What's it mean to be enticed? And entice you to do what? All right, well, here's where the road forks a whole bunch of different ways for everybody. You know, the Bible does clarify real clear who sinners are. What constitutes a sinner? Now, we can generalize it pretty easy and say, you know, somebody that doesn't keep the law of God, or doesn't, you know, obey the commandments of the Lord and live right and all that. But, you know, there's a whole lot of adjectives to describe what a sinner is. And we immediately go to the ones that are the most polarized away from the right. You know, you either have your church people or you have the people that are drunkards or whoremongers or thieves or dope dealers or, you know, abusers or whatever. The worst kind of people, the worst things you can imagine. That's what you consider to be a sinner. But then we don't, it's like we only have those two camps. Now say I go out and I meet a person and, you know, I really hit it off with them and we have a lot of things in common. They don't really go to church, but, you know, we can talk and, you know, I mean, we share a whole lot of interest the same way. And they don't really fit in my camp, but they don't fit in this camp over here of the horriblest, most worst kind of people. So we have created this huge gray middle ground right here for all of the miscellaneous types of people that we consider not to fit in this camp, but they don't fit in this one either. So they go in this one, and that's still fair game for us to be influenced by, to be around all the time. And eventually you hold them in higher regard than what they deserve based on what you're supposed to be doing here. So the problem arises is that everybody has a different definition for what they would consider to be someone sinner enough not to listen to their enticement. And if they don't qualify to be the worst kind of people, then, well, then they'll entertain them. They'll lend them their ear. And then you're enticed. Because enticing is kind of like what, you know, you've heard us talk about the trap line and stuff and baiting traps and all that. Enticing is more than just tempting. It's there's a bunch of deceit wrapped up in enticement. When you're setting a trap, the bait, you want that real visible. You'll even scatter feathers on the ground and stuff to make it look like something's happened there, so it'll draw the attention. You can hang a CD from a tree, from a limb in a tree on the edge of a field, and you don't even have to put bait in the trap. Bobcat will come over there and looking at that CD and jump around smacking at it and step in the trap. Because he was enticed. How? Well, I got his attention off of the danger and just got it all on the prize that he wanted to have. And it was trash. It was literal trash. But it's enough to do it. I mean, it'll get him often. Or just a solitary feather hanging on a piece of fishing string. It entices them because it calls out to their curiosity and the things that they desire. The other verse I got is James chapter 1, verse 14. I'm sure some of you know what that already says. I had it marked, I thought. Hold on a second. There we go. I'm sorry. Chapter 1, verse 14. It says, "But every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed." I think what Solomon was going for here more than anything, in the way that we can look at this, where it makes the bigger impact on our life, is that he's not just giving him advice of what to do in that moment of decision. Like, oh no, I'm enticed. No, it's kind of like changing the oil in your car. It's preventive maintenance. There's a lot of things that you can do to be proactive, as they say, about not putting yourself in a situation where you can be tempted or enticed or lured away to abandon your own knowledge of what right and wrong is and absorb or assimilate somebody else's ideas. And that's what a lot of times what you'll want to do when you're trapping, like, is you find the game trail along the edge of the field, and a lot of times them bobcats and coyotes and stuff, they'll run that same path, just like a lot of other critters. I mean, they'll run that beaten out path because they can see around it and everything. You don't hang your and set your trap right there. You do it across the field. So you hang that feather out there, and it catches his eye because it's out there off of the what he knows is safe. It's over there. And you might not get him the first couple of times, couple of nights, but eventually he's just got to go see what it is. He just has to. And that's when he gets caught. And if he'd have stayed on his path that he knew was safe, that he's run 100 nights in a row, he'd have been okay. But you get him off of the safety of what he knows is right. And then you've got him out of his element, see? And he's in a different, and then you can mess with him. You've got him against the ropes, as they say. You've got him at a disadvantage. And the devil and his followers, his servants, they don't come up usually so bold right in the middle of church, and that's where they try to entice you out the door. They'll do it in a different way. They'll get you away from your element. It's kind of like wolves that chase after, elk or whatever, and they go after the weak young ones. You know, not the ones that turn around and fight them. They pick out the weakest one. That's when they go after. You know, all this nonsense of these riots and all that junk going on all over the country now, you don't see them attacking the gun club or going to the the MMA training center and go attack those guys and knock the windows out of their cars. No, 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 they don't do that. They go find some woman at an intersection or an old man and drag him out of his car and beat on him for a while, you know, or some girl on a subway. That's the devil. He's just exactly the same way. He's a coward, and he's just mean, man. That's the cruelty that you see in nature sometimes with the animals is hard to wrap your mind around. But, you know, the Bible compares the devil to several different animals. That's the same exact way. I watch those cats of ours, and it's just... Sometimes you just intervene because it's just too cruel. It's just too cruel. Catch a little rabbit or something and then just torture it for pleasure before they eat it. Nah, I'll save him. You know, I can't help it. Poor little critter. Cat's mean. The devil's the same exact way. He takes pleasure in the suffering that he can cause. And you know, so that's why the thing we're up against here is the enticement of a sinner. You got to understand that enticement isn't just the temptation. Like I said, it isn't just the bait hanging in the tree or the lure, as it were. It's them trying to convince you, like I said before, to abandon what you know is right and consider a different way. The devil did it to Eve. He enticed her. He didn't say, "Do it now, I command you." He just said, "Well, what if you did this instead?" The power of suggestion, you know, that's kind of what he used, and she just did it, you know. She was enticed because she was led away of her own lust, see. If you're following after your ideals and the things that you go out here and seek out and the wisdom that you seek out and find, I remember certain specific points in my life where I made a decision to find a different truth about a certain thing. I remember being raised the way I was raised, you know, the preaching that I heard, the teaching that I was given, even at home, but in church and all of, I mean, I knew what was right and wrong. But see, it didn't line up with the lust of my flesh. Because that was the opposing force. So I remember when I found ways to justify what I was doing and still call it right. And it meant getting off of that path and going a different direction. And then is when I started to really see major changes start happening in my life. Where every now and then I'd look up and think, how in the world did I get here? But you just keep following after your own lust because that's what sinners do. And so what I'm trying to say about this, what I want to get out of this here is that before you're standing in front of the temptation and having to make that hard choice, whether you're prepared to do it or not, why not put a little effort into some preventive maintenance? And just purpose in your heart. And we look at this and think, well, this is, he's talking to his son, so this is for the kids. But is anybody in here that's an adult ever went a day as an adult and not been tempted to do something that you know is wrong? Well, of course not. It gets worse, I think, the older you get. The struggles become way more complicated than just obeying your mom and dad. Way more complicated. And so if this could apply to anyone more than others, I mean, if the adults don't get this, then how are we going to give it to the children? You're not. That's why the world's in the mess that it's in, because no one's done this for a really long time. You just follow after the lust of your flesh and then just do whatever comes up in the path, just roll right through it and don't even try to resist it at all. And then we're in the shape we're in. So, there's a couple of things about sinners and then I'm going to move on. I want to point out here. Unconverted people always have the same motives, but there's a couple different ways they go about it. They actively entice you to change your mind, like I said, about what you believe. And then they spend a whole lot of time trying to make you think that that's not what they're doing. Yeah. But the end result of what they're after is always the same thing, and that's for you to be their ally. They're not necessarily looking for fellow soldiers to fight with them. They just don't. They just want you to agree with them. So you got to remember the character of a sinner is nothing but pure selfishness. You know, when you're looking and considering your own self to see if you be in the faith, one of the things that I always look for in myself is kind of like a marker of where I'm at, is how much ground I'm lending to selfishness, or, you know, like a rebellious spirit. It hides itself in a lot of different fashions too, but they're always looking for or trying to create an ally that supports them in their point of view. And I, you know, it's fascinating to me how many points of view there is. There's a couple of pages I follow on Facebook that is homesteading, like, has to do with, like, how to come up with, garden-friendly herbicides and things instead of spraying, you know, Roundup around your garden plants, things that you can spray on your garden that's natural and don't harm things, don't hurt the dirt and stuff like that. It's an interesting thing to watch, because you learn a lot of stuff from these. There's thousands of people on there that's figured out how to keep weeds from going in their garden, or the best way to, you know, do this or that or the other. So, but I read the comments on some of the things, and it's amazing to me how many people are on these simple homesteading pages that aren't there for that at all. They're there to, they call them trolls, but they really do just follow these different pages to just irritate people or just fight with people or to just make them feel stupid about this thing that they've come up with. When they go there and present it to all the other people, say, hey, check this out, I made this, it's not real pretty, but it works real good. And then you got somebody on there that's railing on them because of whatever. It's just so, the points of view that you see in the comments of just about any Facebook post, it's fascinating to me how many there are. And you got to think about it. Every single one of those people think they're right. And somehow they have went through all the information they've got about everything, and they've deduced down in like process of elimination, and they've deduced down to I've got these things and I know they're right. And now I'm going to spew them on everyone that I come to. And it doesn't matter if it's about righteousness or church, or if it's about how to stake up your tomatoes the most efficient way, or whether you tie your dog up or not. I mean, just dumb stuff. But everybody has an opinion that they are, it's the hill they're wanting to die on. You know what I mean? They'll fight you too. They'll call you every name in the book. And that's what people do about the truth of God's word. That's why it's kind of like a walking through a minefield. If you're not on that safe path that I was talking about, and what's the old timers always said, an ounce of prevention's worth a pound of cure. Pound of cure. I mean, a little bit of prevention prevents a whole bunch of having to come up with that way to fix it. Mm-hmm. And I'll not say that it's always the most popular path to trod. You know, you get called a lot of things, you know, you get accused of not ever wanting to have any fun or never wanting to go anywhere, or being antisocial, don't want any friends, don't need any kind of interaction with other people and all that stuff. But you know, there's a whole lot less traffic on the high road.
Yeah.
And that's where you want to be. You stay out of a whole lot of trouble if you just stay on the less beaten path. So, if you do find yourself in a situation where you're faced with the enticement of a sinner, you need to be able to recognize it and have the spiritualness, the righteousness in you enough to call it what it is. Even people, man, when we moved over here, we used to have a whole lot of friends, but our life changed when we moved away. So did all of our social circle and all of our friends. And for years, we had no friends. None. Zero. Put just us in our house. And it was a good thing, because we got a lot of things kind of squared away because we did that. But then you kind of get into this comfortable place where you think, well, all right, we got control of this thing now. All right. And you're going down life's road and you start to think, man, it'd be nice to have a friend. You know, I mean, it'd be nice to have somebody to go spend a little time with. So you find, you know, you're going to, boy, you've got some rules and some standards. You're going to, the filter is real thick. Let's call it, say it that way. And so here comes somebody. And you know what? They check this box and this box and this box. And, well, hey, look, this is going to work out. And then you start getting a little closer to them. And by the time that you realize, oh, no, this is not ever going to work out. Then you're too invested emotionally to pull away from them without it causing pain for both of you. It causes a misrepresentation of what you really are because you have to make the hard choice to pull away. And it's tough. And it makes you gun shy after about two or three rounds of that. And you're just like, man, you know, I don't want to do this to my family no more. I don't want to do it to their family. Because you meet people and they're fine folks, you know, but you have to start asking questions to yourself after you get to know some things about them, about whether they're in this camp or whether they're in that big, big paddock in the middle, that gray area of, you know, still, the jury's still out on what they really are. And in the meantime, a lot of times you'll let the good that you see in them let you get way too close. You'll take their counsel. And here, that's where you start getting into dangerous territory. You'll take their counsel about how to discipline your kids. You'll take their counsel about how to talk to your husband or your wife or how to talk to somebody else's husband or wife. You'll take their counsel. You'll let it rub up. It'll rub off on you and you don't even know it's happening. About the kind of things you'll go and participate in. And we all think, like I said, polarized points here, either horribly bad or only good. And well, I'm not doing anything horribly bad, so I'm only good. Well, no, see, you're influenced by the people you work with, the people you talk to. It's so, you know, those of us that's worked public jobs or do still, it's one thing I thank the Lord just about every day for in doing what I do, is that I don't have to be influenced by the people I work with. Mm-hmm. That was always a big oppressive thing for me, is just, you know, it's hard to stay up here when you're down here all day long and just being spit on all day. It seems like spiritually and emotionally and everything else, you just feel like you're just getting kicked all day long, or just trudging through the slough or something. And, you know, it takes a lot more effort to try to stay clean and keep your mind in that right path. And so, you know, you just need to be able to identify what a sinner is and then make that choice. If it comes down to it where you got to say, look, it's either walk away from this or else I'm sacrificing something here that I don't need to sacrifice. I'm compromising here for the sake of not hurting somebody else's feelings. I've seen so many people, and I've done it myself, where I have stayed too long with somebody that didn't need to be staying around because I was afraid to hurt their feelings. I wouldn't just be honest. Because it didn't just offend them, it kind of deprecated myself and my own judgment. A little pride mixed in right there. So, okay, consent thou not. Just say a few things about consent and we'll be done. When we think about consent nowadays, it all only usually is like falls into two different categories. One is the age of consent. We all know what that's about. And then there's the like a consent form you sign if you're going to go like bungee jumping or ride a bull or, you know, something like that. They make you sign a consent form or like for your kid, or else you sign a release form, which is just an adult version of a consent form saying you're not going to sue them if you do break your leg doing this stupid thing. But consent is one of those things that it's an older word. It's not used. It's funny. There's a bunch of words in our lexicon nowadays that we use that don't mean anything now of what they used to mean. And they've taken and changed the meaning, and they're still doing it with words still, like today. Mm-hmm. And it's changing the way people interpret what is right and wrong. Exactly. That's the devil's good old way of deceiving. He just changes the meaning of things. Hath not God said? Hath God said. Ain't that what he said? Hath God said. And he just changed the meaning of what he said to her, and then there she went. Consent isn't just you giving your blessing on something happening or not. Consent involves you in a more deeper way. You know, if I, let's say if you're a woman and someone is trying to hurt you in some way. You hear a lot of these, this Me Too movement thing is, that's the thing that I think is kind of bad about it, is because there's a whole lot of people coming out that are saying, you know, Me Too. But they consented when that happened. And then they had guilt the next day for whoring around.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So then now they found a way to offload that onto him and be a victim / hero for being so brave.
Exactly.
To come out and finally, after 20 years, say, Me too. This man did this. Oh, no. But the night that it was going on, there was consent. Mm-hmm. Okay?
C-O-N means with.
Yeah, that is true. Consent. Yeah. So it involves you. Just as much as it involves you if you consent not. And once again, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, but you ain't always going to have that luxury. There's going to be times, lots of times, where you look around and you realize, uh-oh, I'm in a spot here. I'm in a tight spot. I got to do something right now. I have to make a choice right now. And it's a test of your faith. You know, consensual means that two people or more agree to one thing. And he said, don't consent to their enticement. When you do, you become part of the problem. You become part. I mean, don't you remember what James said? When you're led away by your own lust, then you're enticed. So it comes before enticement. Okay? And then, when you consent, then you are now not, you're not a victim. You need to see the devil and the way he's twisted things up about sin is that it's always, you got to blame it on someone else or something else. It's not my fault. I was born this way. It's not my fault. That they were in control of my situation. It's not my fault. She's bigger than me. He's bigger than me. I was bullied. I was blah, 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 blah. No, it's personal responsibility, even for your circumstances, is something that's not taught anymore.
That's right.
And it's why most people can't do like they used to say and pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. I mean, you know, the prodigal son looked around in the hog pen and said, I will arise and go to my father. And then he got up and did it. There wasn't a 12-step program and a bus to carry him back home and a GoFundMe page to buy him all new stuff and a sponsor for his rehab and someone to hold their hand for the rest of their life so they don't relapse. No. There wasn't. He had to do it himself. Why? Because he accepted the responsibility of the fact that he's the one that did it to himself in the first place.
Exactly.
I'm the one that did this, so I'm going to have to be the one that fixes it. And you need to understand that consent thou not, he's saying don't be a part of what they're doing, because all you're going to wind up doing is trying to find someone else to blame but yourself. It's a trap. Again, it's a trap. It's the enticement. That's the trap that the enticement is concealing. Okay? And once you step in it, now you're stuck. And until you'll accept the responsibility of the fact that you stepped in it yourself, then you'll never get out of it, because you're just going to be blaming someone else for the problem that you have. Consent thou not. It turns it into something that you don't think it is when you're being enticed by it. Mm-hmm. Charles Finney said, silence is consent. Yep. Well, what's that mean? Well, think about it. Sometimes, consent thou not can be remedied real easy by seeing what's coming and running. And then you didn't have to consent because you weren't even there. You seen it coming. You had a little forethought. You had a little wisdom about what's been. You were honest with yourself. Before your pride got in the way, you just run. Just run. Flee.
Yep.
Temptation. Yes. Flee the... you know, resist the devil, he'll flee from you. But he's also said, flee youthful lust, flee this, flee that. Run. Just get away from it. It works the best, really. I've heard even Navy SEALs talking about self-defense, and they said the first line of self-defense is run.
Yeah.
Don't try to engage the enemy. That's the last resort.
Yeah, that's true.
When you engage the enemy, you must be prepared to die.
Yeah.
So if you ain't prepared to die when you feel threatened, then you need to run. And you'll escape all your problems a whole lot more often by just fleeing. And I'm not saying problems that you bring on yourself. I'm talking about temptation. You know what I'm talking about. All right. Consenting or not consenting. Each one requires action from you and me. You can't silently not consent and just do nothing, though. There, you know, if you're in a situation where you got to do something, you can't just quietly not consent and then just nothing. If a bear chases you down and starts trying to eat you, are you going to, out of fear, consent to what he's trying to do to you and not say or do anything to try to prevent it? No, you're going to scream and holler and spray him with bear spray and shoot him with a gun and throw rocks and scream and cry and run, do whatever you got to do to try to keep from being attacked by this critter. Okay? You're not consenting. I've heard, you know, people say, women that have been abused and things like that, and say they didn't fight back because they were just so afraid. I have to wonder about that sometimes, because I'm telling you right now that I've heard a lot of other ladies that have been, you know, victimized that way, and they almost died, tore the fingernails out, did everything they could do to fight, and not because they did not consent. So it stands to reason to me that if you are not consenting, you're going to be doing more than passively bowing out of temptation or enticement. There comes a time when you got to go over there and start ripping it down. Ripping down that temptation that you allow into your life. You got to rip it out. Get rid of it. Stop putting yourself in situations where you know it's a weak point for you. You know it's going to turn your head. You know, it's like somebody that has had a problem with drinking in the past. Well, is the bar the best place for them to be hanging out while they recover their sobriety? Of course not. Also, hanging out with a bunch of drunks is also not a good place for them to recover. Mm-hmm. That's why AA don't work. They replace one vice with another vice. I'm just telling you that. Check it and see if I ain't wrong or if I ain't right. Because you just substitute one vice for another, and then you feel good about not having the one vice you gave up. You got to rip that junk out. You got to get... Well, when you don't consent to something, it puts feet to your... It puts action to what you're saying. You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can't just sit around. We are real bad about that, about sitting and talking and talking and talking about what we would do or wouldn't do in this situation or that situation. And then when real life sends it down the pipeline to us, we just cave. Or we just find our own truth, because that's what the world does anyway, see? And then the people that we're around all the time... That rubs off on you. And you just, well, you know, this is a hard situation. I mean, it's a different kind of situation. I mean, it's my kid. It's my mom. It's my dad. It's my brother. I can't just take such a hard stand on it because it's going to, you know. I think something that is a lie of the devil that comes across our lips a whole bunch. And it's just worked its way into our speech. I don't say anything because it ain't going to do any good anyway. I don't do anything because ain't nobody going to listen anyway. Man, that might work for a while, but at some point, you got to start fighting back. You know, the things that God has given us to withstand the devil and the temptation isn't just armor. There's a sword in there somewhere. And so, if sinners entice thee, my son, consent thou not. Don't just not participate with what they're enticing you to do. You know, stand strong and firm in the truth and be confident in it. You know, we bought that, you know, Jason bought that bucket truck and we started doing some tree work. And I'm going to tell you, it's scary strung out there on the end of that pole bouncing around in that bucket 40 feet up in the air. But every guy that I've talked to that works them trucks always says the same thing. Learn to trust your equipment. He said, once you know you can trust your machine, then you can actually do your job. Well, I ain't got there yet because I'm still, you know, like a cat on a limb up there. Just hanging on. Lord, please, please, please. I'm thinking about them little O-rings and them cylinders that are holding up all that weight while I'm way up there. But let me tell you something. You can trust this equipment. The equipment God's give us to do what he's asked us to do, you can trust it. So stop doubting what you believe. Or not. If you doubt what you believe, then you got bigger problems than resisting some temptation. You need to go back to the armory and regroup. Try to get straightened out that way. If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Just don't listen to them. And then actively do stuff in your own life. Set up challenges to yourself to do things you don't like to do that makes you a better person. It's kind of like working out. That's always a big subject in our house because we're all fat. I think that's the problem. But we're always talking about what we need to do this way and that way or the other about working out or, you know, exercising or doing these things or that. And I haven't found a single one yet that is pleasant. They all wind up hurting. But that's why I still look like this because, you know, I don't challenge myself enough. I'm not willing to do the hard work. It ain't easy work being a Christian. It's a fight all the way. But when sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Just don't consent.